The word Indraha refers to an Asura who is always eager to kill Indra. An enemy of Indra is naturally a friend to the Asuras. But the word Indraha also refers to one who follows Indra or who is obedient to him. When one becomes a devotee of Indra, he is certainly a friend to the demigods. Thus the words Indra, Hardeva, Bandava are equivocal, for they say, your son will kill Indra, but he will be very friendly to the demigods. If a person actually becomes a friend of the demigods, he certainly would not be able to kill Indra. Kasyapa Muni said, my dear gentle wife, if you follow my instructions regarding this vow for at least 1 year, you will surely get a son who will be able to kill Indra. However, if you deviate from the vow of following the Vaishnava principle, you will get a son who will be favorable to Indra. Amagyana Tamaranda Namam Vishnu Badai Krishna Bastai Bhutali Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Bhajane Nirvishesha Shunyapadi Paschati Desha Tarne Vanchikalpa Dubhista Kripa Sundabhyavita Patitanam Pamanibhyo Vaishnavabhyo Namo Namaha. The first time I saw Bhagavad Gita in a bookshop and it said Bhagavad Gita as it is, I thought that was amazing. And certainly when I started reading Bhagavad Gita, I thought it was amazing that someone was actually saying something with any clarity, because there's so many books on spirituality which are very woolly, very cloudy. They don't really say anything. Modern books talk about rainbows and lotuses and dolphins and things like that, and don't really focus in on anything with any facts. At the same time, I was probably quite disillusioned with the hard facts of science, which seemed to be giving very hard facts, but didn't seem to be giving any relief, certainly to my suffering, let alone the suffering of others. So I'm not a scholar on Sanskrit, but I saw that it could be interpreted in different ways, I became quite confused. In one sense, I quite like Sanskrit, because it's interesting, you know, you've got words like... I thought it was quite good when I read that the word asat means temporary. At the same time, it means someone who's rude or uncultured. And I thought, what a nice philosophical sort of twist it has, that you can understand so much from those words, because someone who's a gentleman in this world tries to understand that which is beyond everything. You know, we've had so many cultures, we have so many trends, so many things change in this world. But someone who's a real gentleman or lady tries to look, what's the real basis of all this? Whereas someone who's not a gentleman just sees, you know, the here and now, what's the latest trend, what's going on, right? So I find that quite fascinating. At the same time, then I was confused by, you know, you've got that example of Ramanuja's guru, wasn't it, saying... I daren't say this hardly, saying that, you know, Krishna's got the eyes that are the colour of a monkey's bottom. I mean, you know, even a Kami would be disgusted if, you know, say someone got eyes like the colour of a monkey's bottom, right? Let alone a devotee. It's amazing how low the Mayavadis can go. And because his interpretation, using the Sanskrit, was Krishna's got eyes like a lotus flower. Right? And I can see a few smiles going on people's faces when I say that, right? You see? The same word. So I was thinking, how, you know, why doesn't Krishna make it clear? Here we have Avamparampraptam. I can't make it clear. It's very clear that we're getting direct knowledge from Krishna through the disciplic succession. Everything's crystal clear. And yet at the same time, Sanskrit seems to be open to interpretation. What's going on? And then I thought, well, it's quite simple in one sense. It's Maya. There's that principle. That even if Krishna comes in front of our eyes, and Srila Prabhupada talks about this in Gita, you know, we think, oh, if Krishna came in front of my eyes, then I'll surrender, right? But we wouldn't, because we wouldn't recognize him. Srila Prabhupada mentions that when Krishna was present, people didn't recognize him necessarily. So that's, I think, lots of sort of different arguments or misunderstandings, things like that, can be actually answered with principles. You know, we don't have to know every single argument, every little in and out that we might be asked when we're preaching or something. Sometimes principles can be applied on different levels. And what's this principle? The principle is that Krishna gives us that ability not to understand him. Just like one of the most common questions I get asked by children is, you know, if there was reincarnation, why can't we remember it? Right? It's such a common question. Besides, what's that on your face? So, which is the most common question. So that's the point. Krishna cannot. Maya Javanika Chanam, was that? I can't remember. Kunt is the sloka. Krishna is covered by that curtain of Maya. I remember one day there was one lady recently, when the curtains closed, she got all upset and started dragging the curtains back, much to the dismay of some of the devotees here. So if someone comes up and when the curtains are closed, they drag, you know, the curtains back. I want to see Krishna. What chance have they got of seeing Krishna? Are they going to see Krishna? Right? If you force yourself, even me, you know, we can understand a lot about Krishna from ourselves. If you force yourself into my life and try and understand me, right? You watch me with CCTV cameras, you come and, you know, interview me and interrogate me. Am I going to reveal myself to you? There's got to be respect. So how can we force ourselves through the curtain of Maya? We can't. It's only when Krishna, we do that. We keep ourselves safe. We don't reveal. Of course, we don't learn that sometimes. Sometimes we do. But we shouldn't reveal ourselves to people until we've found we can trust them. So this is also here. This is Krishna. And we can mis-see this if we want. Like the children say, well, you know, what's reincarnation? You know, why can't we understand reincarnation? Well, as soon as we understand reincarnation, we have to get spiritual. Right? We can talk later on about whether there's a God or not, but as soon as you talk about reincarnation, it's challenging to worldview. It's immediately challenging. Therefore, we have to have the choice to ignore it. It's like Lord Chaitanya says that the explanation of the Mayavadis, when they see the Sanskrit and they juggle with it, it's a smoke screen. Actually, there is interpretation. When is there interpretation? When the meaning's not clear. I didn't understand this one. Srila Prabhupada writes this somewhere in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I didn't understand it at first, but just suddenly the other day, I just clicked what he meant, you know. It takes a bit of purification, doesn't it, before we start to understand Krishna consciousness. You know, it's quite clear that if a meaning's clear, you just take it. Now, sometimes in life, you know, you can't understand something, then you have to say, well, what does it mean? But if something's crystal clear, you don't start going, what's it mean? Right? If it's obvious, it's foolishness. So therefore, the responsibility is up to us. Atmate manyate jagat. And we see the world according to our mentality. So similarly, we can see the scriptures according to our mentality. We saw Krishna according to our mentality. And this happens not just in spiritual terms, but even in material terms. This material world is full of so many pictures, so many parables, so many metaphors, so many things that can point us in the right direction philosophically. One day I was out with my brother, it was many years ago, about 10 years ago, I was out in the car, and there was one fellow who had a few psychological problems, or as some people say, is a few beads short of a round. And he was actually sort of coming up, and me and my brother went in the car having a really quite a deep discussion about something, you know, really sort of locked in there. And he sort of started hovering around trying to get attention, you know. And he was being so sort of, you know, it's like when someone's really trying to get attention, you're trying to have a conversation, he was sort of butting in, that we started thinking, this guy's weird. So then we started sort of turning our backs on him even more, right? And then he started accusing us of, oh, why aren't you paying attention to me, right? Well, obviously we're not paying attention to, because so the way you're doing it is pretty strange, right? We're feeling hurt, you know, we're having a private conversation and you're sort of butting in. So sometimes we do that in life. It's called a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Someone thinks, people don't like me, right? People don't like me. So they sort of start going up to people going, here I am. And people think, strange. And they think, oh, they're turning away from me. It's definitely true they don't like me, right? So sometimes what we do is we actually have a mindset. And when we have that mindset, we act in a certain way. And then life reacts to make that true. That's what Maya is about. We come into this world thinking, there's no God, right? I'm free, I'm independent. You know, I've got one life to get it all in, enjoy myself. And we'll see it like that. Of course, life is always prodding at us, saying, no, it's not true. Krishna's always trying to wake us up. So what do we have to do? We have to push that away. And we have to sort of maintain the illusion. It's hard work. Very hard work, right? That's why sometimes people say if you're in anxiety, we're not being honest in some way. It's hard work maintaining illusion, right? Like when you're pretending to be a good devotee, you know, really something else is going on inside, you know. It's hard work trying to keep up a face of being a devotee when, you know, you're doing things wrong, right? Or you're just being honest. You know, it's easy to be honest. So, it's so easy just to see life in different ways. The other day I came in, and when I got into lunch, because I'm often coming to lunch late because we're looking after the children when they eat, and I came in and there was only one piece of the nice marrow that we grew in the gardens this year, right? There was only one piece of marrow with a bit of, you know, with the cheese on. I don't know if anyone liked that. It was really good, you know. And there was only one piece left. So I actually thought, when I got in there, I thought, only one piece left. Why didn't these guys save me a piece, you know? And then I suddenly thought, no. Krishna saved me the last piece. Krishna saved me that last piece. And I felt so good. And that marrow tasted so good. And then a thought came in, how can I say that Krishna saved it for me? Who are you, Prabhu, to think Krishna saved it for you? And I thought, come on, don't let this false humility stop the fact that Krishna loves us, right? And that's true. We want to have the truth. That's the truth. Krishna loves us. So is that the right way to see or not? Huh? Krishna saved that piece of marrow for me. That's the truth, right? So it's so easy to sort of see wrongly or... Actually, I've got at the moment I've got quite a bad cold, and I've been working in schools, and the teacher's main instrument tool is their voice, so it's been quite difficult going into schools and teaching. But now I'm thinking, well, at least I haven't got swine flu, right? So I don't feel too bad at all, right? And even if I did have swine flu, right? I used to eat bacon. I probably deserve to get swine flu. It's karma. You know, how many, you know, it's our emotion or our way of seeing has got also a way of, emotion has something to do with our way of seeing, isn't it? Emotion is our way of seeing. Our emotions are involved in the way we see, right? They colour the way we see. So they have to be based on reality. You know, before I joined the movement, I'd be eating chicken, right? So, you know, eat a bit of chicken for Christmas, a bit, you know, in 1 year you've eaten a whole chicken. That chicken had to have a whole life of suffering. A whole lifetime of suffering. Haven't I done something wrong, let alone the previous lifetimes? So what's, you know, if I get ill, it isn't so bad as it could be. Maybe I deserve a lot less, a lot more. Less, that was a Freudian slip, but... So, of course, at the same time, I'm talking here about, there appears to be contradictions. I couldn't understand this. You know, I don't have the Sanskrit. We could work it out maybe with the Sanskrit, where it's the friend of the demons or it's the killer of Indra. I don't know. But what I'm saying is sometimes there's apparent contradictions. Now, I'm not saying, sometimes we have to live with those apparent contradictions. Shishi Radhigo Kulanda Ki. So it's not, at the same time, it's not that when we see a contradiction in someone else, we don't always challenge it. Right? But we have to know when to challenge a contradiction and when something's just an apparent contradiction. Srila Prabhupada uses that term in the sixth chapter. Gyan Vigyana Triptatma Kutoshto Vichitendri, where he's talking about a wise person sees stone and gold at the same. He sees gold, stone, just the same. And because there's that famous story of the, wasn't it that famous story of the sadhu in India who was going along, and as he was going along the path, he saw something gold on the path, and he thought, my wife's behind me. I know what she's like with money, you know. A bit sexist. I know what she's like with money. So he started getting his foot and trying to cover the gold up so she wouldn't be attracted by it, because they were vanaprastha, I presume, you know, giving it all up. So there he was, trying to hide the gold. And she came up and caught him. She said, my dear Patti, what are you doing trying to cover up a bit of earth with another bit of earth? You're just trying to cover up some material energy with another bit of material energy, right? So who is the more realized, right? Who is the more realized? So that there Srila Prabhupada says that one can be, by academic knowledge, one can be confused and deluded by apparent contradictions. But by realized knowledge, one sees clearly. Right? And then he mentions Takshi Krishnanamadi Nabhavedgrayamindra. We have to be purified. Again, it's us. It's not what's out there knowledge, it's us seeing clearly. And when we're purified, we can overcome those contradictions. At the same time, we must confront confrontations. Srila Prabhupada does it at the right time. This is the difficulty. You know, if someone comes up to you and says certain thing, are you just going to accept it when you see a contradiction, right? You know, when you're buying things, right? You know, when you're wheeling and dealing, you've got a spot for the tricks. Oh, well, you said that, but now you're saying that, right? Or in religion. What's the classic one? Oh, yes, animals have got two eyes. Most animals have got two eyes anyway. They've got a nose. They've got a liver. They've got feelings. We've got a soul. They haven't got a soul. Uh-huh. Right? Contradiction. We've got so many things in common with the animals. They've got a soul. We haven't. Come on. Right? Another contradiction. My brother brought up to me a couple of nights ago. He said, we're living in a society where Darwin is, I think it's his 100 years since Darwin died or turned into a monkey or something, I don't know what it was. So they're saying that survival of the fittest. Now how do you reconcile survival of the fittest with the fact we've got all this bureaucracy about equality? You know, if you know anyone who's out there working, you know, so much about equality, you know. You're practically threatened. If you're an employee, you're threatened. Practically fearful that you're not going to be equal to your employees, right? But how you have to have survival of the fittest? That's about people being higher or lower. The fittest survives, and yet we're all equal. There's something wrong there. Or, you know, scientists are saying everything comes from chance, and then they're not getting their wages by chance. There's a contradiction. You've spotted something. There's a fiddle. There's interest. There's selfishness. And when a person's selfish, there's always double standards, right? Whenever there's own interest, there's always double standards. So we need to be able to see those contradictions. At the same time, we can't always jump in and say, oh, that's a contradiction, it's wrong. I'm going to give up this Christian consciousness. When I first joined, I read in the Bhagavatam, babies in the womb for 10 months. I thought, these guys just haven't got the basics, you know what I mean? I learned that when I was little, you know, was it 9 months, one week and 2 days? I thought, well, you know, what's going on here? I could have walked away and said, this Christian consciousness is rubbish. But I kind of stuck with it. And then it suddenly, the penny clicked a little, the rupee clicked, the penny dropped, the rupee dropped. A little later, 10 lunar months. 28 days, not 31 days. Most months are 30, right? Work it out. I think you find it comes to about 10 lunar months, comes to 280 days, comes to about 9 months, 1 week and a few days, right? So sometimes it's so easy just to jump in and say, that's wrong. But could we have made a mistake? Could we have not seen correctly? Do we have some anattas that we don't understand? Do we need to clear and purify ourselves before we understand right? Now, for Christian, you know, if someone was following, like a so-called Christian or someone like that, and they're saying, well, you can eat meat because the animals haven't got a soul, and they said, we've got to get purified, I might question that. You know, you'll understand one day. You know, just keep going and praying. Usually it's not, it's a cop-out, isn't it? You know, when you ask questions to certain people in religions, and they say, you know, the Lord works in mysterious ways, you say, oh, forget it, mate, you know, you don't know, right? You don't know. Let's be honest, let's be straight. Just say you don't know, right? So it's kind of difficult knowing when a contradiction's right or not. That needs a bit of smartness, or at least Krishna's help. Actually, the word here is used equivocal, and that's also mentioned. Equivocal means, you know, you're saying one thing, at the same time you're saying something else. Prabhu, you said that, yet at the same time you said that. I don't understand. That's equivocal. Bit like contradiction. Vocal, you got diction. Diction, vocal, right? So, it happens in Bhagavad Gita. Third chapter. Krishna says, you're giving me equivocal instructions. Why? Arjuna thought, well, one hand you're telling me to be a philosopher. What do philosophers do? Just sit on their backside reading all day, right? And then you're saying work's bad, right? But you want me to fight. You're saying work's bad, you're saying philosophy's good, but you want me to fight. So someone could say, well, you know, okay, work's bad, just become a philosopher. What's the solution? Work with detachment. It's all the thing we have to do, isn't it? To reconcile that. You know, we have this sort of thing. We don't want to work and think, oh no, my service has gone wrong. Oh, I'm finished, right? Or, yippee, my service is going good. No, we've got to do our service. If it goes good or it doesn't go good, we have to carry on doing it. That's the solution. We work, but at the same time, we live in this world. We're experts. Devotee has to become expert in this world, and yet we're detached. It's not that we run away and say, or we say, I'm not going to be expert. And that's the tendency in the beginning, isn't it? We do everything shipshoddy and say, oh, well, I'm a devotee, I don't care. Right? No, we have to be completely expert. Arjuna was there in the middle of the night, shooting his arrows in the middle of the night, becoming expert. Still, Krishna had to save him when he was fighting with Jayadratha. Still, at the end, after fighting for a whole day, getting through three different divisions of the army, still Krishna had to just, at the end, make sure he killed Jayadratha, because he couldn't quite do it. He couldn't, just like tying up Krishna, Mother Yashoda could only get 2 inches off, 2 inches off, 2 inches. Krishna had to do the last bit. Ashvatthama, what about that? That's another contradiction. Krishna can solve all contradictions. It's only when we're limited we think there's not contradictions. It's only when we have limited view that we see contradictions. You see people who are not so bright, they see contradictions all the time, right? Someone who's more intelligent, they can reconcile contradictions. Just look if people are mediators when there's an argument between two people, right? It takes someone very expert to bring the people together, especially in couples counselling, right? To bring the two people together, to reconcile that. It's a great art, the art of mediation. And it's so easy when we get a contradiction. What we do is we try and kill one of the sides, right? When you have a contradiction or a dilemma, it's so easy just to put one to the side and try and have the other one. You know, I used to do it in the early days when I was a young devotee, that, you know, well, what's the rule? I tell you what the rule is. I never miss any of the morning program, right? Never, ever. That makes it simple, doesn't it? I never, ever, ever miss. You know, then one day you want to go to the toilet during, you know, japa period or something, right? Oh my God, my world's falling apart, right? You know, you're very ill. You know, so it's so easy. I mean, maybe this is just, maybe you all know this, and maybe it's a very, you know, maybe it's just a simple thing in life. But often we do that, or we have a balance, we flip between one and the other, right? Like for instance, I'm feeling so lusty, or I'm feeling so angry. But a devotee doesn't feel lusty, okay? So I'm not a devotee. No, I don't feel angry. I don't feel lusty. Right? So we try one or the other. We try and pretend we're not something. That proves I'm a devotee. But then it's pretty obvious I am those things. therefore I'm not a devotee. And then we feel bad, right? What's the solution? I'm trying to be a devotee. That's the reality. I'm trying to be a devotee. It's a process. It's not static. So when there's a contradiction, there's a solution. Ashvatthama, when he was caught, Bhima wanted to kill him. He killed sleeping sons. You know the story, Ashvatthama and was it Kritavarma and Kripacharya? They were the only three practically of the Kurus left after the Battle of Kurukshetra. And Ashvatthama was watching there were some crows in a tree and some owls came and killed the crows, killed all the baby crows. And so he got an idea. He said, they're all completely wiped out, just like devotees after a marathon, you know. They're all crashed out after the 18 days, all the rest of the Pandavas. And so they went in and slaughtered them all in their sleep. Horrible. Horrible. It's so sad, that bit, Mahabharata. You know, the Pandavas have just won, and then Ashvatthama and Kripa and Kritavarma go and slaughter them all, and he kicked Drishtadyumna to death, and the sons of Draupadi. Very sad. And then Bhima said, kill him. Rascal, kill him. Right? And Draupadi was saying, he's the son of our Guru Maharaj. Don't kill him. So Krishna was there in between them with four arms. And what did he do? He cut the jewel off Ashvatthama's head, which is as good as killing him. That jewel gave him power. Right? And it's an insult as well, to think to cut someone's hair off if they've got long hair. It's just, that's why we're becoming, you know. In my day, when you became a brahmacharya and you shaved your hair off, it was practically tantamount to death. Right? So cutting your hair off is like death, right? But he didn't kill him. So this is, Krishna can always reconcile these opposites. And even, as I say, even on the mundane level, sometimes we can find, in arguments, how many times do we find we get defensive? Someone says something, immediately we feel fear in our heart and we say, that's not right, no, I don't agree with that. But if we actually listen to the person long enough, we often find we go to a place where we both agree. Right? You ever done that in life where you think someone says, oh no, I don't agree with that, but it says that. And we think it's challenging our view of Krishna consciousness, but if we listen long enough, right? Just like when Srila Prabhupada, he was talking about one man, he was worshipping Shiva. And the devotees were going, Prabhupada, he's working on Shiva. Prabhupada said, that's all right. But Prabhupada, he's worshipping Shiva. That's all right. As long as he's not worshipping him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So if you get things in perspective, things can lie together in perspective, where there might be a contradiction. And Krishna's able to solve those contradictions. Sometimes when I'll just finish off, when I'm telling the story of Hiranyakashipu to the children, they always like the story of Hiranyakashipu, especially because he's a demon, he's called Hiranyakashipu, they think it's very funny. So when we're doing the story of killing Hiranyakashipu, you have to be sensitive when you're telling stories, by the way. These words, sometimes the Sanskrit words, the kids, they laugh at them, so you have to kind of make it into a bit of a joke. But when I asked them, how come that Krishna, Lord Nrisimhadev, could kill Hiranyakashipu despite having those boons that he couldn't be killed day or night, etc. I say, how could he do it? They just say, because he's God. He can do anything. No. Not at all. Not at all. He was so clever that he got him killed neither day nor night. Neither on the land nor in the sea on his lap. Neither by man, you see. So sometimes we do that. When we have contradictions to solve, what do we do? I'm a devotee. I can do anything. No. It needs the wisdom. Not the wisdom to go under contradictions, but the wisdom to reconcile and, right, do both things at once, satisfy all different things together. And Krishna can do that. After all, isn't it amazing? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All the power of the sun is coming from him, and yet he's just a little boy. that wants his mum to feed him. Isn't that amazing? You know, when there's opposites and they're reconciled, that makes something very strong. To be patient. To be patient without being lazy. To be firm and assertive without being aggressive. These are real values. These are real values when they get depth. To be like Parikshit Maharaj, to be like the sun, to be so powerful, and to be as cooling as the moon. Because it's so easy to go one way or the other way, but not to be complete. And of course, Krishna is the complete whole. And I don't understand this, but I know one thing. Krishna can reconcile all opposites. So thank you very much. Any questions, please?